Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, universal healing energy, and the mysteries beyond. Today I welcome Nick Redfern, author of Bloodline of the Gods, who is a former guest of the show, and we have discussed that book. And today I am delighted to talk about his wonderful new book, Weapons of the Gods. Hello, Nick, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, Cheryl. Well, thanks for having me on the show again.
You know, Nick, as listeners of Healing From Within know, my guests and I are curious about life and its origins and the implications for knowing more about our inner and outer realities, or consciousness and subconsciousness and awareness as we grow and evolve. We're always trying to move past limitations and fear to a greater alignment to our human and divine potential, always trying to understand this world, the universe, and life with greater awareness. In today's show, Nick Redfern, who is the author of more than 30 books on UFOs, cryptology, and the world of the paranormal, will discuss the 1945 bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the first and last victims of the atomic bomb in this generation, and whether they were just the latest in a long line of Armageddon-level events. Nick will take us back in time to discover that many ancient civilizations may have cracked the secrets of the atom only to become the victims of its terrifying power. Others may have been destroyed by hostile aliens with their own nuclear arsenals. And as we examine these thoughts, let us look to evolution and present times for peaceful solutions, because cataclysmic destruction is not where we want to go. We want to go towards peace. Nick, I always love to ask my guests, I may have asked you this before, but I'm sure I'm going to get a different answer today. I always like to ask to think back to childhood for either a memory or a person of value that was important to them, and which may have guided their life interests and what we value now as adults. So think back to when you were younger.
Well, actually, that's an easy question to answer, because how and why I got involved and interested in UFOs dates back to when I was about 10 or 11. And my father was a radar mechanic in the British Royal Air Force, and he was involved in several UFO incidents in the 1950s when the radar operators were tracking these high-flying, fast-moving objects approaching the English East coastline coming from the vicinity of Scandinavia, and they were performing all sorts of strange maneuvers that no aircraft at that time, you know, could do. So fighter planes were scrambled to try and intercept them. Pilots reported seeing these strange lights in the sky but couldn't get close to them, and this went on for 3 days, and everybody involved, like my dad being one of the radar mechanics and also the radar operators, the pilots and the ground crew, everybody was told, you won't talk about this. And as I said, my dad didn't until I was, just before I entered my teens. And that really sort of got me interested in the UFO subject. And I began reading books by people like John Keel and Brad Steiger and Frank Edwards, and that. So it was really that defining moment from my own father that got me interested in all this.
Because you had it from a legitimate source, someone you loved and trusted, and it wasn't so far out, because it was a very real because of who it came from. And I think that's happened to many, many people in many countries. And there is enough documentation now to know that there are many things that can't be explained so easily, and the possibilities are endless. And that's what we're talking about today, being open to the possibilities. So what is the theme of Weapons of the Gods?
Well, it's a study of a very controversial issue, namely the idea that our civilization may not have been the first to have developed atomic weapons, that there could have been two things going on. One, that there were ancient very ancient early human civilizations that came before us and destroyed themselves and may have just left remnants of legends like the people of Atlantis and things like that. Or it could be a combination of extraterrestrials visiting the Earth in the past, and they may have played a role in these atomic destructions as well. So, in other words, it's a study of the idea that we're not the first, so to speak.
Well, looking back in history, I know there's mm-hmm. some evidence for this. What are some events that may show destruction physically by nuclear weapons? I know we're talking about the ancient Pakistani culture of Mohenjo-Daro to the Lonar crater in India. Tell us something about these
places. there's more than a few. I mean, I guess the one that most people would probably be aware of, at least, if not the context, would be the story of the biblical story of Sodom and Gomorrah, which were reportedly destroyed by God's wrath because he didn't like the way the people were living, etc., etc. Now, you can actually place this story, the stories of both cities, in very much sort of a nuclear confrontation context. And by that, I mean that what happened was that the story revolves around a man named Lot and his family, who were visited by these mysterious visitors who warned him to take his family out of town because God was planning on destroying the city, or the cities, I should say. Actually, four were destroyed, although Sodom and Gomorrah are the two most well-known ones. Now, when you sort of see that there was advanced warning, it sounds like somebody or something was planning on destroying the cities. So Lot did what he was told. He and his family left the city. Now, on the way out, so the old legend goes, Lot's wife turned back and was turned into a pillar of salt. That's the biblical tale. Now, of course, people say, well, you know, in a nuclear explosion, you're not going to be turned into a pillar of salt. That's impossible. However, what's intriguing is that in the original texts, the word salt was interchangeable for the word vapor. So in other words, she may not have been turned into a pillar of salt. She could have been vaporized. Mm-hmm. And that is actually one of the unfortunate side effects. If you're too close to an atomic detonation, they are so powerful that you would literally be vaporized, even if you were sort of a mile away from the explosion. And on top of that, the biblical story talks about this huge pillar or cloud hanging over the cities for days on end, which sounds very much like the ominous mushroom cloud that we get with atomic explosions. Now,
That seems like it could have been visitors who, for some reason, saw something wrong with the way people were managing life here and brought their own weapons. It could have been advanced life form, or it could have been they were working among us and introduced this way of, having a nuclear war long ago. It could be either one of those two things. Now, I know, because I read it in your book, that there was a discovery in the early 1950s of a buried layer of what appeared to be a form of green glass in the deserts of Israel, which resembled Trinanite. Can you tell us something about this?
Well, this sort of goes back to the end of the Second World War, you know, when the atomic bombs were dropped on Japan. Mm-hmm. The two bombs were dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and, you know, it ended the Second World War because the weapons were so powerful the Japanese realized they just had to surrender. Now, before the two bombs were dropped on Japan, a test bomb was secretly tested out in the New Mexico desert on the fringes of the White Sands Proving Ground, as it was called at the time. And nobody really knew what the outcome would be or how powerful the explosion would be. But what happened was that when they detonated the bomb, the temperature reached such an incredible level that what it did, it fused the sandy desert desert floor into this glass-like substance that became known as trinitite. And it was called trinitite because the area where the bomb was exploded was codenamed the Trinity Site. And so, in other words, what happened, it heated the sand up so hot that as the sand was thrown into the air, just in, you know, in thousands and thousands of tons. As it came down, it rained down in the form of this green glass, and that's one of the unforeseen side effects. Nobody knew that was going to happen, but typically in desert locations, it always happens if an atomic bomb is detonated, and that's actually how glass is actually made out of sand. But what's really intriguing is that, as you noted, there have been discoveries of very ancient, tens and tens of thousands of years old, very ancient equivalents of trinitite found in Israel, in Libya, in Egypt, all across the landscape. And even the famous Egyptian pharaoh, Tutankhamun, he actually wore a piece of this very similar stuff to trinitite in a necklace around his neck. And there are only two ways, really, in which we could offer an explanation as to how that could happen thousands of years ago. One would be by the strike of something like a meteorite, which would heat up in the atmosphere and slam into the ground. Or the other one is an atomic explosion. But if we look back at all these ancient tales like Sodom and Gomorrah and other areas where this trinitite stuff was found, we find that the gods, so to speak, warned the people in advance of what was going to happen. Now, if this was something, a random event like a meteorite, you would not have such advance warning to where you could specifically say where the object was going to slam into the ground. You know, you could not be that precise, but you could be if it was, you know, a directed, localized atomic weapon that was fired at the area.
Go on to, what is the connection between the, I may not be pronouncing this correctly, Mahabharata and ancient nuclear war?
Yeah, well, yeah, the Mahabharata is what you're talking about. This is a very interesting part of the story because it sort of really opens things up to sort of a completely different level, because it deals not within the Middle East, where so many of these stories did occur, but in northern India. Now, the Mahabharata that you mentioned is a very ancient document, a huge document, written in Sanskrit, which is the language of Hinduism. Mm-hmm. And it talks about a battle or a war that went on in northern India called the Kurukshetra War. And you would imagine that, given the fact that it's been written, that it was written, I should say, thousands of years ago, and some researchers have suggested it actually tells a story that goes back much further and possibly dealt with events that occurred tens of thousands of years before, you know, the documented early civilizations of our civilization developed. And you would imagine, you know, a tens of thousands of year document talking about war in ancient India would revolve around sort of soldiers on horseback with spears, bows and arrows, swords, etc. But it actually doesn't. It talks about this confrontation taking place in what were known as Vimanas, which were fast-moving flying aircraft which could zip around the skies, and it talks about them unleashing these iron thunderbolts on cities, and the cities would be destroyed. And there was talk of the soldiers with their hair falling out and their fingernails falling out, mm-hmm. and they would throw themselves into rivers to try and clean themselves. And it sounds, when you read it with hindsight, it sounds very much like a very early primitive description of atomic bombs being released, and then the personnel, the soldiers, and the people in the cities being affected by radiation poisoning and dying as a result.
So absolutely, if there were descriptions like that, then there were beings from other places that brought that to this world. We were not advanced enough for anything like that. So that's very, very conclusive of the fact that this has been going on a long time. Travel between places in the universe seems to have been going on for a long time, and yet so many people refuse to want to consider that idea at all. But let's go on to this. I found this interesting. There was an Indian mystic whose name was Pandit Sastri, a channeler, that's someone who receives information from higher realms. which I do myself. I'm actually a medium and an intuitive healer. So tell us something about that, a mystic channeler.
Yeah, this is an interesting angle because I talk about this quite extensively in the book. He was basically someone who channeled from higher entities, shall we say, information on these thousands of year old Vimana type aircraft. And, you know, conventional wisdom has suggested that if they did exist, well, maybe the ancient people of India developed sort of like early balloons, hot air balloons, that kind of thing, which isn't impossible. However, when you read his story, what you actually find is something extremely different. Namely, in this sort of altered state, when he would download, so to speak, this material, he was talking about stuff that, or aircraft that sound eerily like today's sort of Top Gun type aircraft, you know, that are flying around the skies today. And, you know, it sort of really opens things up to the idea that within ancient India, that somebody thousands of years ago, you know, was flying things that against all probability and history suggests otherwise. Now, the whole process, if you like, was very intriguing because, as you know, sort of channeling in some respects does sort of place the person into an altered state of mind, and they get this information channeled through to them, and then it's a matter of interpreting it, and that's what he did, and it resulted in this huge manuscript, which you can find online, which in English was translated as Science of Aeronautics. And this all went on in the early part of the 20th century, when even our civilization had barely got moving with aircraft, you know, and aircraft technology. And so, in other words, he was very, Sastry was very much ahead of himself. And when you place his story in the context of the Mahabharata, it really does come across as if he had sort of channeled right into this ancient war in northern India, that he actually tapped into what was actually going on at that time.
Absolutely. And the saga of the Wedge of Ayud is also mentioned. Did he tell us about that, or did that come in another way? Aluminum, the story of...
Yeah, that's sort of a different... It's partly related to it, but it didn't come from him. This actually relates to a discovery in the 1970s of what some ancient astronaut researchers believe could be sort of a remnant of one of these Vimanas. You know, that's one of the things, you know, we're all always on the lookout for, is evidence, and, you know, hard evidence, physical evidence.
Yes, we want
some
proof
of these craft. Yeah, and so there's sort of a great deal of debate as to what this so-called wedge is, that some people have suggested it's part of a landing gear from a Vimana, which, you know, if that was the case, that would be sort of an incredible development in, you know, the sort of the battle to verify these ancient tales.
Now, you also, can you tell us something about the claims of ancient atomic warfare, perhaps in the United States? We've talked about other places, but not the United States. So what can you tell us about what remnants we may have here, or what thoughts or people doing research here around? Maybe around the entire Great Lakes region. I know there were two scientists, Firestone and Topping, and if you can tell us something about that.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing, because we don't often hear stories coming from the United States of things like, for example, ancient nuclear war in the United States. People often focus on these stories like Mohenjo-Daro, India, the Mahabharata, the Middle East, Sodom and Gomorrah, those kind of things. But there's actually a very interesting situation that revolves around, as you said, the Great Lakes of the United States. Now, what we've found is that there are extremely high levels of what's called radiocarbon data. And this sort of develops from what is called particle bombardments from effectively like radioactive materials. And the dating of this particular disaster that occurred, or whatever it was that occurred around the Great Lakes area, was at some point between 18,000 and 8,000 BC. Unfortunately, we can't be more precise than that, but we can be fairly sure that it was between those times. And something highly radioactive caused both massive devastation and high radioactive levels. Now, it's also been speculated that the Great Lakes themselves could have been carved out by these massive explosions. You know, so much destruction occurred and the landscape was blown to pieces that you had these huge, you know, gaps and crevices in the ground, which eventually filled with water and became the Great Lakes. So that's an interesting one. And there are also a number of other stories where we know that round about 12,000 to 10,000 BC, a great deal of animals that were living in the what is now the United States, like mammoths and saber-toothed tigers, died extremely quickly. They didn't just go extinct. They became extinct, or vanished is probably a better term, literally almost overnight, as if there'd been, again, massive destruction that wiped out, you know, huge numbers of animals, and also early people as well.
Yeah, I've always thought about how that happened. It's been a concern of mine. Recently, in a tweet, I saw that presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, during an interview, said if she became president, she would open up all the documents concerning UFO investigations to the public. There's a massive number of research and events that have been reported. And asked if she believed there was any credence to these findings, she answered something like, well, there's too many people reporting events for it to be made up. I believe many of the government officials know a great deal. And perhaps there will be reasons when they do let us all know what's going on, why they waited so long. So, Nick, let's go on to Stitchin. I'm interested in him. He recently came across my thoughts with someone I met years ago. I'm just completing my third book, New Life Awaits, and I mention him in my book too. So can you tell our audience something about Zachariah Stitchin, who was a Russian writer? He died at the age of 90 in 2010. And what were his interests?
Well, yeah, I mean, Zachariah Sitchin was someone who, I guess, for people in the modern era today, you know, associate with ancient astronauts in the same way that in the 60s and the 70s it was Erich von Däniken. And I guess that Sitchin's primary area of research was what had become known as the Anunnaki. Mm-hmm. And the Anunnaki were reportedly this very highly advanced, incredibly long-lived ancient race of people that visited the Earth in the very distant past, possibly hundreds of thousands of years ago, and may have genetically manipulated some of the early sort of proto-creatures that ultimately became us. You know, long before Cro-Magnon man and Neanderthal man, we're talking about, you know, a quarter of a million years ago, perhaps even more. And Sitchin came to believe from studying ancient texts that the Anunnaki essentially sort of upgraded and genetically altered these early types of primitive animals that became us, so they could use them as a slave race. But he also believed that over time, the Anunnaki presence on the Earth, they kind of eventually turned on each other. They fragmented and sort of had their own factions, and they reportedly went to war on our planet, but against each other. Mm-hmm. However, in using nuclear weapons in the process, they caused, you know, sort of massive damage to our planet, which had obviously had a direct effect upon the people and the animals that were alive then, and could have led to things like, you know, these stories of worldwide floods and massive devastation and, you know, things like this, where there are clearly in the distant past, you know, massive changes on the Earth to the atmosphere and the populations, just complete wipeouts. So Sitchin strongly believed that that nuclear weapons had been used by the Anunnaki on the Earth and had led to the stories of things like the Mahabharata, Sodom and Gomorrah. He actually believed that the entities that visited Lot and warned him and his family to get out of town, so to speak, were representatives of the Anunnaki. And when you read his work, his interpretations, you can quite easily see how a lot of these legends would have been suggested to be the wrath of God and so on, but it could have just have been sort of almost crazily insane Anunnaki fighting each other for turf wars on our planet.
Makes sense to me. Nick, what would you like readers to reflect on after reading Weapons of the Gods?
Well, you know, I think the story, although it's a fascinating story, it's also disturbing in its implications, in the sense that if there were highly advanced civilizations like ours who came before us, who knows how many times, 4, 5, 10, 20, you know, we just don't know, and they all destroyed themselves, you know, the bleak image that leaves is, well, does that mean we're destined to go the same way, or could we pull ourselves back? So, you know, my hope is that if proof ever comes out that there were advanced civilizations before us, we would be intelligent enough and not foolish enough to think, well, you know, we've got to try and pull ourselves back from the brink. We cannot go the way they went, you know. And I think that's a good thing to leave people with, you know.
Well, thank you very much for that. That is the way we need to go. We are intelligent and we are loving beings of hope, and we need to use these facts to make better choices. So I want to thank you, Nick Redfern, author of Weapons of the Gods, which studies long-gone civilizations to answer the question, did previous cultures blossom, develop, and thrive only to destroy themselves tens or hundreds of thousands of years ago with the same atomic technology as the bombs that decimated Hiroshima and Nagasaki? To read this engaging quality conspiracy and UFO investigation, go to Nick Redfern 14. Is that correct, Nick?
Thanks, Joe. It's well, if people can reach or can buy the books at Amazon online, or they can actually buy Weapons of the Gods and many of my other books off the shelves in Barnes and Noble as well. So.
Okay, thank you very much. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, it seems life and history and our humanity follow similar processes of self-investigation and discovery, always leading to the repetition of man using his spiritual gifts to create, and then his ego or mind thoughts to generate fear, deception, and negativity, leading ultimately to confrontation and destruction. Was the technology for atomic warfare created by hostile extraterrestrials and shared with certain ancient elite humans? Might the residual effects of that warring mindset be at play in these modern times? We really must learn to change from these ancient wars and what caused damage to both the earth and its people, because, as Nick said, now the stakes are simply too high, worldwide annihilation. By being aware of the long line of catastrophic events which destroyed civilizations and cultures, with a serious and slow torturous process, we must realize that the threat of an all-out worldwide war has to be stopped. Nick and I, especially with what's going on with terrorist attacks now in Paris and Brussels and Bernardino, Orlando, Istanbul and Bangladesh, and a race protest in the United States escalating, it's time for peace and coming together and remembering we are spiritual beings having a physical life and must bring higher values and consciousness into our thinking. Nick and I would have you remember, it doesn't matter if there is injustice and intolerance out there in the world, because within you is a nuclear force of eternal energy, universal connection to source, and we have to draw upon our sense of righteousness, personal power, and strength to combat the forces trying to lead us into things like past nuclear destruction. And even one person talking like this and thinking like this might make the difference. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to listen to change makers, scientists, spiritualists, educators, musicians, and artists, and ordinary citizens speak of the way forward. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.